The mystery of the unsolicited manuscript.
I think this water's okay.
Well, test it.
Test it how?
You dip your elbow in it. If it feels just a little warmer than your arm, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Don't forget to roll up your sleeve.
Thanks.
Ha ha.
I needed that.
August 1st. It was a sort of a surprise when Krista had a girl. Well, it was supposed to be a surprise. We didn't want to know beforehand, but just the same, I thought it might be a boy. I don't know why I thought that, since I've got six sisters and no brothers, but anyway. Geez, it was a girl. We had a name all picked out. Gerard George Devereaux, my father and Krista's father's names. My mother's name is Mary, so was Krista's mother's name. Mary Devereaux. So we hadn't settled on a girl's name by the time the baby was born, but the second night when they were still in the hospital, Krista was nursing the baby and the baby was snuggled against her breast, eyes closed, her little nose in a pocket of flesh Krista had made with her fingers so she could breathe. And I reached down and stroked the baby's warm little head, and I said, Martha. Krista looked up at me and thought for a moment, smiled. It was Martha, all right. Wherever she had come from, no telling how far she had traveled, that's who she was. Martha.
Oh, here she comes. Daddy's gonna bathe the baby.
Just be careful.
Of course I'll be careful.
Concentrate.
I'm concentrating.
At first we had a lot of help, like all my sisters and my mother and two brother-in-laws and an aunt and an uncle. They all came down to Toronto in waves. And Krista's dad, Georgie, and her aunts and uncles and cousins, and of course Mr. Piatelli, too. He owns the cab company where Krista and I work. He was a great help.
Coochie, coochie. Hey, look, she's smiling at me. Oh, hey.
She's cute, eh?
Are you kidding? She's the best-looking baby in the whole bunch. Yeah. No question. Lucky she don't look like you, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I'll be here tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Oh, geez, you don't have to. You know I'll have my cab so I can...
Hey, look. If you're going to be a father, you got to start thinking like a responsible adult. Cabs are lousy with germs. 10 sharp, out front. She's going home in a Cadillac.
So Martha and Krista and I were driven home in Mr. Piatelli's 1959 classic pink germ-free Cadillac, where a whole crowd of relatives were waiting. Maybe everybody was nervous because, well, Krista uses a wheelchair or crutches most of the time, but she doesn't need to use either one in our place because we have our apartment set up with strategically placed tables and backs of chairs. Anyway, finally, everyone went home except Krista's Aunt Carla and my mother. And then in another week, my mother went back to Big River, and one more week, and Aunt Carla went back to her husband, and then we were alone. Free.
Oh, boy. Well, she's wet, she's slippery, the little trout.
Now support her head.
Look, I used to have three younger sisters. I know what I'm doing.
Did you bathe them?
No, but I used to wash the dog.
Just concentrate, okay?
I think paradise must be lying beside your wife with a newborn baby between you. And spinning out dreams. In my case, how I'd become that successful novelist I was always talking about, and how the three of us would travel the world and meet exciting people and live in exotic places. The thing about paradise, though, it's too good to last.
Okay, there you are, the 1350.
Well, here's 15. Could I have a receipt, please?
Absolutement. I'm practicing my French.
That's very good.
Yeah, well, my dad was French, Canadian, you know, and all that side of the family. There you go. And so my daughter, and I want her to be bilingual so we can talk together in Quebecois.
Oh, that's great. How old is she?
6 weeks.
Well, you can't start too soon, can you? Thanks. Bye.
Bonsoir.
Hey, wait! Hold up! Hi.
Hi.
Is the cab free?
Yes, sir. Hop in.
Oh, no. Look, I'd like you to deliver this package for me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can't get away right now. Do you know Balfour Park? It's off Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a guy out front by the steps. Just deliver it to him. Oh, here's $30. Will that cover it?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's two.
Thanks.
Much.
By the time I got to the park, there was no guy waiting. I went back downtown, couldn't find the guy who gave me the package either. Oh, well, I still had the $30.
Hello, Walker.
Hey, Inspector Kiss. It's 6 in the morning. What are you doing here?
there's not something the matter with Krista, is there, the baby?
No, it's nothing like that.
Oh, jeez.
Congratulations, by the way. Alfonso was telling me all about the kid. She doesn't look anything like you, eh?
No.
Yeah, well. Walker, we've got a problem.
We do?
Balfour Park. You weren't anywhere near there last night, were you?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought you'd say. Why?
Well, I had this package I was supposed to deliver
to you. A package?
Yeah, it's still out in the cab. What's the matter? What is it?
911 had an anonymous call. Someone saw an AP cab and a driver that fits your description. Not to mention he got two numbers on your license plate. About 10:30 last night. The driver got out of the cab and dragged a body down into Balfour Park.
What?
And about 11:30 last night, one of the officers who responded found the body of a young woman down in the ravine, hidden under some bushes. She'd only been dead a few hours.
Are you kidding me?
Do I look like I'm kidding you?
Here it is, right here. I told you, all I did was try to deliver a package.
Well, this is interesting.
What?
The young woman had ID on her. We know who she was. Arlene Mason. His package is addressed to her.
It is?
But it's already been mailed once. Stamps, postmark.
Yeah, and sealed back up with scotch tape.
Open it.
Me?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
What's the matter? You look like you've seen a ghost.
Nothing. Jeez, it's like a manuscript. It's a copy of my novel.
So it is. The Blue Planet by... Oh, yeah, there we are. Walker Devereaux.
I don't get it.
And let me try to help. You see, we've been to her home already, conducted a preliminary search. She was, a literary agent. There was another copy of your book there.
No.
It wasn't out in the open, though. We found it in the bottom drawer of a dresser in her bedroom.
Look, I don't know her. Jeez, Inspector Kiss, you have to believe me. I don't know who she is.
There were some letters tucked inside the cover to her from you.
What?
We've checked out your typewriter already. You use an old Underwood Standard, right? It's a perfect match.
You went to my house? You talked to Krista about this?
It's bad, kid. It's real bad. I need a statement. We'll get you a lawyer.
Inspector Kiss kind of smiled at me. I guess it was supposed to be sympathetic, but it didn't quite make it. It looked more like, "You're screwed, kid." And then he motioned me to follow him.
Walker.
Hi, what are you doing here? Where's Martha?
Oh, why wouldn't I be here? I took her to Aunt Carla's.
Oh, good.
Walker. Oh. What's happening? You look awful.
It's just... they really grill you. It's so good to hold you.
I didn't know what to do. I was going to call a lawyer, I called Dad.
No.
Well, I didn't. They said you already had one. These policemen came and pounded on the door at 4 this morning. They looked through everything. They took your typewriter away.
I must be a really lousy writer.
Walker, it's no joke.
I know it isn't.
They wouldn't even let Alfonso call the cab so I could talk to you.
Well, what did they tell you?
They said that it's about a murder. That's all they said.
Yeah, well...
Can you leave now?
For now, anyway.
Let's get out of here. What was her name?
Arlene Mason. They've got these letters. They're really crazy. They start off like... well, love letters. Then like whoever got rejected by her. And then... they get threatening and bizarre and then pleading and full of really strange poetry, then furious again, incomprehensible, almost hysterical. And I've signed every one. Like it's my signature. I can't believe it.
Well, of course you can't believe it. You didn't write them.
No, I know I didn't. She had a copy of my book. There was another copy in the envelope, like I'd mailed it to her months ago, but I didn't. Inspector Kiss showed me all the matchups, the letters, the label on the package. They were all typed on my typewriter. I don't get it. Inspector Kiss. I don't think he believes me.
Well, then the hell with him.
I have to say something. I have to say, thanks for believing me.
Oh, don't be stupid. Walker.
Geez, I love you so much.
I love you.
I love Martha.
I know you do.
I love you both. Oh, God, what an awful mess. My head feels like it's been hit by a 2x4.
Walker?
What?
I don't care how your head feels. We can't just sit here and let this happen. We have to do something.
That's Krista, my wife. I think she's changed a little, though, since she's had the baby. Before, well, she was always tough in her own way. No one could ever push her around. But now it's the three of us. It's all about our family, and she's ferocious.
What do you mean you don't have any records? How can you keep anything straight? How do you know who you sent it to?
Well, you're getting everything all messed up.
Look, the cops got everything all messed up. And it's impossible to get anything messed up in this mess anyway. Do you even know how many copies of your novel you had Xeroxed? Do you have any idea if you sent it to 5 people? 10? 15?
I should have kept copies of my covering letters.
At least.
Like I said, ferocious. Mr. Piatelli called to say Inspector Kiss had located that woman who'd been in my cab just before that guy came up and handed me my own novel and asked me to deliver it to Balfour Park. Her address was on my trip sheet. At least she could back up part of my story. So I called my friend Inspector Kiss.
So what?
So I was set up.
You talked to some guy standing beside your cab. I talk to people all the time. Yeah, by the way, she didn't see that guy hand you any package.
Oh, well, I guess that's because she turned away and started walking up to her house.
Right. Yeah, another thing you should know, Walker. How many times do you figure I've heard people in your same situation say I was set up?
A lot.
Right.
Inspector Kiss, do you really believe I could have done that to that woman?
It doesn't matter what I believe. All that matters at the end of the day, Walker, is the truth.
How's it coming?
Well, I know one thing. I'm not going to look through your mess any longer.
That good, eh?
What did Inspector Kiss say?
Nothing much. That woman, she didn't see anything.
Oh. Well, come on, you'll just have to remember. How many copies did you make, Walker? How many did you send out?
It doesn't matter. Anybody could make copies from my copies. There could be thousands.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Somebody comes right in here, sits down at my desk, and types on my typewriter.
They'd need a key. Walker, maybe they live in the building. Or maybe the people who lived here before us. We didn't even have the lock switched.
Or maybe the superintendent. Mad Dog Omer Mahaber.
This is not a joke.
I know it's not.
I don't think it's a joke.
I know. Krista, we have to be logical.
Well, be logical then. I'm trying to be. But how can you be logical when everything in here is a mess and you don't even have any records?
Okay. Arlene Mason was strangled to death. We know that. I'm a suspect. We know that. Somebody else is the murderer.
We know that. So?
So then, there has to be something that connects the three of us. And since I didn't know Arlene Mason, then I must know the murderer. Or at least, he knows me, and well enough to set me up.
Right.
Right. So what connects the three of us to each other? Exactly what the guy handed me.
Your novel.
My novel. That's the common denominator. It was in her home, it was in his hands, and it's my novel.
So he must have seen it somewhere, wherever you sent it. He saw it. And your address was on it. He knew where you lived.
And he had to spend some time watching us get to know what we do and when we do it. Our chief suspect is the guy who gave me the package, obviously.
Well, then, why isn't it obvious to Inspector Kiss? I thought he was your friend.
He has to do his job.
Well, then why isn't he?
He probably is. He's probably following up all kinds of leads right now, and he just can't let me know.
Oh?
Geez, you're throwing off my concentration. So, the guy with the package watches me leave the garage to start work at my usual time. He follows my first fare to where I stop to drop her off, parks somewhere behind me, and comes up with the package before I pull away. That's easy enough.
And he already knows the body's in Balfour Park.
Yeah, or he follows me there, waits until I leave, and then puts the body in the ravine.
He's the one who calls the police, Walker. He's the one who makes the anonymous call.
Right. Of course. Krista.
What?
When Inspector Kiss showed me those love letters, I just kind of stared at them. But now, the more I think about it...
What?
They were too good. Either they're for real, and we already know that they're not, or somebody made them up. You know, like creative writing, a piece of fiction. But they're really good fiction. All the changes the guy goes through, the choice of words, the way the whole thing was constructed.
What do you mean?
I mean, they're just too good. Either someone who's a writer or someone who should be a writer wrote them.
Now keep your hands in your pockets and don't touch anything. Not everything's been dusted.
Right.
Now here's the list of her clients' names, or names anyway. We got out of her computer. Then we can go through the books on the shelves, you know, one at a time.
Right.
Now don't touch it. Don't sit down. Don't touch anything.
Right. Arlene Mason's house turned out to be a fairly modest bungalow on the east side of Toronto. Most of it was given over to office space. I didn't recognize a thing, which was kind of a relief. I'd called Inspector Kiss about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, told him my theory about the letters, and talked him into taking me out to look through her writer's list. Maybe I'd recognize somebody's name who had had something to do with me. Or my novel, anyway. At first he said no, then he changed his mind. I know why. One... because maybe I was onto something, and two, because he could watch me with those hard, cold black eyes of his for any little slip.
Do you recognize this guy?
No.
This one?
Nope.
Yeah. You know, the trouble is, writers on the back of books, I mean, they look all the same. Like they just woke up, beard, rumpled sweaters. I know, it must be some kind of artsy-fartsy thing. I mean... is that what the guy who handed you the package looked like?
Well, he was clean-shaven.
Oh. All right. How about this guy?
Jeez, I don't know. No. Hey, I know the publisher.
You do?
Yeah, White Noise Publishing. They were going to publish my book. It was on their short list. It just had to make it through one more meeting.
And?
And it didn't make it. They sent it back. I left the house without recognizing any names on her list or any writer's photos on the books of her shelves. Inspector Kiss said, "Don't worry, kid. A writer as the murder suspect still ranks high on my list." Inspector Kiss doesn't show a lot of class sometimes. So I didn't tell him what I was thinking. The senior editor from White Noise Publishing called me about 3 times. He was great, really enthusiastic about my writing, asked me how I made my living, did I do a lot of notes before I began the actual writing, what kind of typewriter did I write on anyway. His name was Howie Baker. Finally, he called to say they changed their minds, sorry, and he mailed me my novel back.
Who?
Howie Baker.
He's the senior editor here.
We only have one editor at White Noise, and she's been editor for over 15 years. Sorry.
But you were going to publish my husband's novel, The Blue Planet.
Walker Devereaux?
I don't know why you didn't. It's really good.
Krista.
We were? That's news to me. Let's have a look. We're a relatively small operation. I chart all the work and process. The Blue Planet. Does sound fake. Here we are. The Blue Planet. Unsolicited. Editor's note. Not recommended.
Oh.
Well, hardly anything is.
See, I told you so.
They sent back with the usual covering letter. I'll just check from her ledger to see when she sent it out. Well, that's strange. It's not been recorded. I suppose I could go through that pile over there. That's the unsolicited mountain. Half of them waiting to be read, half to be sent back.
But we got it back from Howie Baker.
Well, I don't know anything about that. Sorry.
Yeah, just one other thing. Do you know a literary agent by the name of Arlene Mason?
Sure. Why? What's that got to do with
the... Well, I know her, too, and I was just wondering, like, do you publish any of her writers? Would they come in here a lot?
No, we haven't published any of your people for quite a few years now. Not since Jerome Cunningham. Why?
Cunningham? I know him. I just saw one of his books,
Something like just tomorrow.
Only tomorrow. That was his first big success. After that one, he dropped both us and Arlene Mason. Got a major U.S. publisher, moved to New York, and made loads of money. Huh. He's written at least 10 best-selling thrillers. People are always making movies based on them, and they're never any good.
I guess you haven't seen him for a while?
Oh, no. He drives around now and then just for old time's sake, I guess, whenever he's in town visiting his parents. To tell you the truth, I don't like him. Now, if that's all, I really do have work.
Just one more question. Do you happen to know what agency he's with now?
William Morris.
Jerome Cunningham, Howie Baker, the same guy. During one of his visits to White Noise, Cunningham could easily have picked up my novel from off that unsolicited mountain, and, like Krista said, the guy had dumped Arlene Mason. Krista called the William Morris Agency in New York. It was kind of scary. She was so convincing. She said that she was a film producer from Toronto, got put through to the secretary of his agent, who said Jerome Cunningham was already up in Toronto, visiting his parents. He'd been here for a few weeks. Krista said she had to talk to him about a possible film project. She had this deadline. It was urgent. Could she have the Toronto phone number of his parents, please? We just looked at each other, like he was in Toronto.
Oh, no, dear. Jerome's up at the cottage. He's trying to finish a new book. He loves to go to the cottage. It's so peaceful, you know.
Yes.
Jerome needs peace and quiet. New York is so busy, he's always being invited out.
Yes. Well, Mr. Goldhar of the William Morris Agency had...
I would have thought Mr. Goldhar would have known, dear.
No. He thought Jerome was visiting you. So here I am, just arrived in Toronto with important papers for Jerome to sign. Now, don't call him. I don't want to disturb him any more than I have to. Just give me directions to the cottage, and I'll rent a car and go up tomorrow.
Oh, there's no phone anyway. Jerome had it taken out. He needs all the peace and quiet he can get.
It was after 5 o'clock by the time we left Aunt Carla's, piled into Krista's 79 Toyota Tercel hatchback with the black racing stripes, and headed up north. Krista had to feed Martha, then left a bottle of genuine 100% mother's milk for her 11 o'clock feeding, don't ask me how, and promised to be back by 5 in the morning. That was stretching things out a little. Martha was going to be, like, really ticked off. I didn't want Krista to come anyway. I was hoping there'd be the two of them there, Jerome Cunningham and the guy who handed me the package to deliver. All I needed to do was identify the guy, sneak away, and call Inspector Kiss. I wasn't about to make a citizen's arrest, but... sometimes things can go, like, wrong, and I didn't want Krista in the middle of it. I wanted her home, safe, with Martha. However, she had other ideas.
I told you you needed someone who could see straight to drive. You're weaving all over the place.
Bump on the road. I grew up on roads like this.
You've been up for over 24 hours. You're out of your mind. Let me drive.
I want to make time. We'll never find this place after dark.
It's my car.
You can drive back.
We better not do anything stupid when we get there.
How about afterwards?
Like what?
Like making love in the car?
You're out of your mind.
I love you.
You're still out of your mind.
The sun had set and the tall pines were blending into each other like one dark, impenetrable wall by the time we reached Little Hawk Lake. But it was just as his mother had described. Take the road round the lake to the left, go to the third private road, it's the fourth cottage inn. I left Krista in the driver's seat, car pointed back the way we came, and walked. Down to the fourth cottage, built almost on the lake. There was a new minivan parked behind it and a light in one of the windows. Crept closer, reached up to the windowsill, pulled myself up, looked in. Just in time to see a man wrapping wire around something inside a plastic garbage bag. Then he walked over, looked out the front window as if he were checking on how dark it was outside. It was the guy who gave me the package and It was the writer on the back of the book with his beard shaved off. It was both of them, all in one. I let myself down, hid beside the pump house and waited. A few minutes and he came out the door carrying something heavy, the garbage bag glinting in the dark. He walked along the dock.
Oh, God. Damn it!
Wrestled it into a rowboat, looked around, got in, and rowed away. I counted the strokes. 8. And then from somewhere straight out in the dark, I heard a splash. And I knew right then I was home. I was home free.
Oh, jeez. There's something about changing your own kid's diapers. It doesn't really bother you much.
Here's a fresh one. Now, don't forget...
To powder her, you say that all the time.
Sorry.
Anyway, I was talking to Inspector Kiss today. He's really pleased with himself.
Oh?
Yeah, well, he'd gotten the lab report back on my typewriter the afternoon we'd driven up north anyway. A close match, but not a perfect one. So, when he fished the other Underwood out of the lake and it matched the letters and the label on the package perfectly, he knew he had Jerome Cunningham well nailed. He'd just taken my manuscript, looked at the letters A through Z, and filed down his keys to match. But now it is a perfect match to him. The guy was just too clever for his own good here.
Huh. And for Arlene Mason's.
Right. Pass me that. Thanks.
But why?
Well, because of his first bestseller, Only Tomorrow. She was his agent and his lover, and one day this manuscript came into her from some unknown would-be writer who lived in the boonies. The plot was just too good. Cunningham stole it, changed it around just enough, and suddenly his career went big time. He dumped her about 8 years ago. Unfortunately, she made a mistake. She threatened to reveal his plagiarism and ruin his career. She started to blackmail him. Never blackmail someone who writes mysteries. There we go. Oh, yes.
That's why I knew you didn't do it, Walker. All you write are serious, unpublished novels.
Yeah. Thanks.
So here we are, Krista and Martha and me. I'm still writing, and I'm still sending out the Blue Planet, too. But I'm keeping better records. Who knows what the future's going to hold for us? I really want to make it as a writer, I really do. But like I said to Krista that night when we were driving back to Toronto, Krista suddenly pulled over and we made love in the backseat of the car. Like, who's keeping score? Right now? Jeez. Everything's great.
You have just heard Midnight Cab number 22, The Mystery of the Unsolicited Manuscript, written by James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker, Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, Howard Jerome as Mr. Piattelli, and Neil Monroe as Inspector Kiss. Special guest stars were Ted Follows as Jerome Cunningham, Pixie Bigelow as the secretary, and Christina Collins as the cab passenger. Extra special guest this week was Eleanor Beecroft as Mrs. Cunningham. Music for the series has been composed and conducted by Milan Kimlicka. The casting consultant was Linda Grierson. The production assistant, Nina Callahan. Our recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. Midnight Cab has been produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell. For the Mystery Project, I'm Bob Bolving.